Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Just Interesting podcast, the show where we aim to talk about things that we find just interesting. Robin, what are you doing, man? What are you doing?
I'm excited. So excited for the interesting things we're going to be talking about today. Alex, so excited.
Well, I'm glad to hear it, Robin. That's good. As you can see, it's just me and Robin here at the moment, but fingers crossed. Fingers crossed we may get a third visitor at some point in the podcast, but at the moment it is just the two of us. Robin, how are you doing this week?
I am well, thank you. I'm doing all right. Sorry, I just became Indiana Jones, remember? For those of you watching us, those of you listening, that will mean nothing to you. But yeah, I'm doing a bit of a cold, so apologies in advance if I sneeze into the microphone and or cough and everybody's a bit unpleasantly disturbed by that. Nothing major, don't worry. It's that season, I think. Hay fever, the weather changes. You open the windows naively thinking, sunshine, everything's warm, and then you sit in the freezing draft all day and then suddenly, bleh. Plus everyone else is getting a, you know, it's like, how are you, Alex? How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. It's nice to breathe that clear, clear air and not have a cold. Oh, it's lovely. I love it, Robin. No, I'm very sorry to hear that. I'm sorry to hear you're a bit under the weather. I hope you feel better and you're getting all your fluids and
I'm trying. Everything I have a pint of water. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, good.
It was. Good. I did. I got. So recently, I was away, as everyone knows. I missed an episode of the podcast, and whilst I was abroad, because I was abroad, shock horror. I also.
We know, Robin. You were searching for the Holy Grail.
I was searching for the Holy Grail. I got really, really ill. I mean, like, really ill. Really badly ill. I thought I had COVID, but I didn't because I tested and I was negative throughout the time that I was testing and had this cold. Anyway, so I bought some, because I was abroad, I bought some foreign medication for the alleviation of cold and flu symptoms.
Some Norton antivirus.
Well, yeah, maybe. I don't know what it was called. It was in writing I couldn't understand. And I just took it in the way I think I was supposed to take it. And I've still got some. And I'm staring at it now and I'm thinking, do I dare take more? Because I'm not sure it worked.
Is it just a USB next to you that you can just plug in? And sorry, that one was lazy. Come back to me in a bit. I'll have a better one.
You already used up Norton antivirus. I think that's quite good. It's quite good. Yeah. Anyway, what are we talking about today, Alex?
So today, Robin, there's an interesting article that I don't know why I'm introducing this. You shared this with me, Robin, but there's an interesting article that's come out from two scientists that claim to have an answer to the long lost question. It's not a lost question. The Fermi paradox, which is basically states that, you know, based on our equations of how the universe works and how based on Drake's equation and how life evolves and based on the observations that we've made of the planets and distant stars around us, life should be everywhere in the universe.
Yep.
Aliens should be everywhere. So why haven't we spotted any? And that's the Fermi paradox, basically. It's an interesting question. And any kind of answer is very daunting and very kind of a bit.
It's a bold thing to try to answer it. Yeah,
it's an existential crisis waiting to happen. But two scientists claim to have found the answer to it. So we're going to be discussing that in a little bit. But before that, we're going to be talking about some of interesting things that we've learned this week. And we're going to be talking to you guys in the comments.
Live.
And also we've got some from the previous week's podcast. And then who knows, later on, maybe we'll be able to do a quiz. Maybe. I do have one locked and loaded, ready to go in case we get a third guest on. But we'll see. We'll see.
A third guest. Martin's been demoted. He's just a guest now.
a third host. If we get a third host on. But how is everyone doing in the comments this fine Thursday? What's everyone going on? Is it Thursday? It's Friday.
No, it's Friday. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's Friday. Gosh, you know time flies.
I thought, I'm kind of like, we were expecting to film this yesterday, aren't we? That's why I've got Thursday.
That's why, This was going to happen yesterday, but then there were problems, so it had been postponed till today. I just want to say hello to everyone in the comments. Everyone watching, actually. Everyone who's watching us live on YouTube. And of course, hello to everybody listening to us on a podcast platform of your choice at a later date. But particularly want to respond right now to Atari Duckman, who says, maybe Robo Robin assimilated Martin and now he is Martinus of Borg, which, as a Star Trek fan, I appreciate that reference. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Every one of us is slowly becoming absorbed into the hive mind, the Robot Robin hive mind. Martin has just been assimilated, and I'm the only one with a free conscience right now.
So my favorite things, science fiction wise, my favorite things are Star Trek, so the Borg, and The Thing. The Thing, like the Borg, assimilates human beings. So I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty worrying in and of itself. But I'm gonna breeze past it. I'm gonna forget about that. A Busy Bee says, hi guys. Hello, A Busy Bee. Welcome to the stream. Aaron Lee says, hello. Hello, Aaron Lee.
Crime Maniac also says, hello. Crime Maniac, what a name.
Michael Findlay's in the chat. Happy Friday, everyone. Happy Friday, Michael Findlay.
Hey.
Everyone's saying hi now. Doom says, Alex, we need a hamster update. Cheddar is doing very well, thank you. Cheddar is the name of my hamster. Yeah. How, you forgot the name of my hamster?
I'm so sorry. I thought they died. Was that a different hamster?
He didn't die. He's fine.
Okay, I'm glad. I'm very glad. Cheddar is alive.
Yeah, he's doing well. It's nearly up to his second birthday, so he's doing all right as hamsters go.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You know, Cheddar was really good melted on pizza.
Have you just discovered Cheddar on pizza? Is that it?
No, I was trying to say you should kill your hamster and eat it on the pizza.
Dear Lord. Dear Lord, Robin. I don't know what to say to that. I don't know what to say to that. Horrendous. Horrendous stuff. I would never do such a thing to my precious little boy. My precious little boy!
Precious little Cheddar. All right. Well, what have you learned this week, Alex? I want to know.
So I came across this week. This was pretty funny.
Okay.
So there's a stone tablet that's 3,200 years old. It's an ancient Egyptian tablet that records excuses for why people missed work.
No.
So this is it's called an ostracon, which is a piece of pottery used for writing on. And it has a register of attendance at work. And it's labeled, I think this is in the British Museum or as part of one of their collections. It's labeled Year 40 of Ramses II. And it provides a workman's register for 280 days of the year. And there's 24 lines of Egyptian hieroglyphics on the front and 21 lines on the back. And there's above most of the dates on the slab, there's a word or phrase in red indicating the reason why an individual was absent from work on that date. So talk about permanent record, Robin.
That's incredible.
And so this fact of the week is kind of turned into a bit of a life pro tip for everyone out there. If you need some new excuses for how you can call in sick or get out of work, here's some excuses for you that they were using 3,200 years ago. So one of the excuses was his daughter was bleeding. There you go.
His daughter was bleeding.
There you go. That's why he wasn't at work that day.
Okay. That sounds like a period reference.
It does, yeah. And a lot of these, I'm guessing, have time-related reasons that make more sense at the time, but now they just sound kind of weird and funny. So the next one is brewing beer. If you need an excuse to get out of work, I'm busy. Sorry, boss, can't come in.
I was brewing beer.
Got a new batch of...
I thought the whole point is that you just leave beer to brew, don't you? You know, don't you just homemade brew?
I've got to pay attention to my beer. I can't focus on work right now.
Got to watch it.
Here's one that would definitely get you out of work, no questions asked. I'm making an offering to a god. So,
I mean, you can't argue with that, really.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Next one's pretty good as well. Similar theme to the brewing beer. Libating with his father. So drinking with dad. I'm drinking with my dad today. So.
Why did they translate that as libating? Why didn't they just translate that as drinking? That's such a fancy thing to do, these archaeologists, linguists.
I reckon libation is different back then, isn't it? It's not like, it could be like a ceremonial thing. It may not just be like, I'm having a drink. It could be like I'm pouring one out to my dad kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess.
Maybe it's like a ceremonial thing. But either way, it's funny. One of my favorites.
Time for the morning ceremonial libation. Come on, son. But dad. the work. Nope, today we're doing it.
One of my favorite excuses on this list was I'm fetching stone for Ken Herkepschef. Sorry, boss. Can't come in today. I'm just fetching a stone for my buddy. Ken Herkepschef, which sounds, it's probably like a, you know, an
must be somebody
Egyptian
important,
name,
right?
But it sounds like such a fake name that it's like you're calling up to say, yeah, I'm getting a stone for Ken Herkepschef. Yeah. The next one's pretty understandable, in fairness. The scorpion bit him.
Oh.
I like how it's not a scorpion bit him, it's the scorpion bit
the
him.
The scorpion.
Which kind of makes you think that it's like there's only one that hangs there's around the work site.
It's been plaguing all the workers. Yeah.
It's one scorpion that's been biting everyone.
Yeah. Well, see, the problem with that excuse is that everyone knows scorpions don't bite. Sting with the tails.
Yeah. Idiots, yeah. There's a flaw in your theory, yeah. And then my favorite, and possibly the most metal excuse for like leaving work ever, but like not going into work, is burying the god.
What?
So this was, so I can only assume that this was Kratos working at this ancient Egyptian company, and he called in sick one day and said,
I'm burying the god. Burying the god. I'm burying the god. Maybe that's a euphemism for something else. I'm making Osiris my bitch today. When you say you were burying the god, do you mean you were having a massive poo? Yes. Yes, I do.
Oh. So there you go. Oh, wow. That's what I learned this week.
That's a good one. That's a great fact. That's absolutely astonishing. That's the best. That's one of the best songs we've ever had. That's really good. I love that.
A busy bee says, this probably makes a lot more sense. Maybe it was a mistranslation. Maybe it was dog. Burying the dog. That makes it way
burying
less
the dog.
Fun.
That makes a bit, yeah.
But that could actually be it, yeah. Yeah.
I prefer God. I do prefer God.
Yeah, I like to imagine this as Kratos just in a middle management role. Kratos, I've noticed you haven't been in for the last 2 weeks. What have you been doing?
I've been burying the god. Oh, Jux Interior, welcome to the chat. Says, do we know what the job was? They have a very diverse work pool.
I don't know if we do actually. No, it doesn't say. I'm just on the British Museum's website. It doesn't actually say what the job was.
Yeah, they don't know. They don't know.
Construction, probably.
Although, yeah, delivering a stone or whatever it was to Ken.
Yeah.
That's a classic get out for construction.
Exactly. So, Robin, that's what I learned this week. Tell me, what have you learned this week?
It was not like that. It was kind of darker in a way, because last time on the podcast we were talking about treasures stolen during World War II by the Axis powers, particularly Germany, and hidden, and some of it was discovered, some of it hasn't been discovered. And whilst we were looking into that, I kind of got back into World War II and, you know, started looking up stuff about World War II, and I discovered a couple of interesting
stories,
things.
Yeah.
A couple of interesting facts about the age of people during World War II. Is. So one was that apparently the average age of the German soldiers fighting on the Western Front against the Allied invasion of Normandy was 6 years above the average age of the British and American and Canadian and Australian soldiers who were invading.
Wow.
So they were 6 years older on average, yeah. Because by that point in the war, Germany had lost so many men and they were committing all their youngest and most recently trained recruits to the Eastern Front to fight the Russians. Yeah, that they were leaving their older soldiers to defend
the Home Guard, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. The people, because they didn't think there was going to be an invasion. So they put all their oldest soldiers in
France. That was essentially like the Normandy kind of defenders like on the German side were basically Dad's army, but...
Yeah, I mean, not quite that extremely old, but they were, on average age, 6 years older, which means some of them were a lot older. Although I think I also read that historians suspect that the, you know, they all invaded the beaches, Omaha, Gold, and whatever the other ones were called. And the plan was to invade the beaches and then link them all together to make a kind of stronghold for further landings of troops and tanks and other resources for the Allies. And they hoped to do that in the first 24 hours of the invasion, but it actually took them about 6 or 7 days to do that because right. the German resistance was a lot stiffer than they expected. And historians think that maybe one of the reasons the German resistance was tougher than they expected is because although the soldiers have been less recently trained, they were actually older and a bit more experienced.
A bit wiser.
Yeah, so they were slightly more gritty, you know, dug down a little bit tougher.
That's interesting. I mean, it was always going to be tough. Do you know the average ages, like what the average age was, just out of interest on both sides?
Well, this is something I need to do a bit more digging into. I tried to look into it, but I couldn't find out what the average age for the German soldiers was exactly. But the average age for the Allied soldiers was 20, 21.
Blimey, wow.
So, which means that being 6 years older as an average age means they were probably 27, 28 on the German side.
So not quite that old. Army.
Yeah, not quite that old, yeah. not like ancient. But because, of course, you know, Americans in particular, they hadn't fought yet, you know.
Yeah.
They'd invaded Italy, but they're all very fresh. Whereas the British, of course, had got through a lot of their young recruits already with Dunkirk and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, just going over to the comments, Robin, Michael Finley brought up, well, actually Spiffing brought it up first. And this is a blast from the past almost. not Holy Foreskin is still my all-time favorite. Do you remember the Holy Foreskin?
I do remember the Holy Foreskin, the prepuce or the prepuce. Yes.
Yeah.
That was a great.
The foreskin of Christ.
The lost foreskin of Christ now.
That's
Will
the,
we
that
ever
the,
know?
That's the real Holy Grail, isn't it?
Yeah, that is the real Holy Grail. It's what I was looking for.
Well, did we do a podcast about that? How, was that someone's, was that your This Week I Learned?
Was no, we did the whole podcast about it. It was Lost Relics, I think. Religious Relics.
And that was one of them.
And that was one of them, yeah.
I think
and
we
that
did
may
that
have started the
Twitch.
Whole castration thing. That was a live stream. Yeah, it was. Yeah. One of our first, possibly our very first live stream. Can't remember. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
But good memory.
Oh, well, did you have any... any favorite comments from the week that you'd like to bring up, Robin?
Yeah, I do, actually. There was a comment on that same podcast last week that we were talking about the hidden gold around Europe. And AJ Satpalkar said, a lot of German officers fled to South America after the war. Surely they must have taken some of that gold or loot to fund their activities there. And I thought, yeah, we didn't mention that on that episode, but it's quite
a lot of them
it's
did,
possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of them went away and they were officers, so they would have had help and they would have had all the goodies. So yeah, I suppose it is possible that some of it is in South America with the families of the officers who went out there.
Also, yeah. I imagine a lot of that money may have gone towards the people funded or like that created and allowed these rat lines, they were called.
Yeah,
you know, you can only get on the boat if you hand over that that block of gold you've got there, my friend.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah.
So I imagine a lot of it kind of went towards, was paid out trying to get to South America, possibly.
Mm. Funky Monkey 1235 says, going on a 3-hour drive to Indiana and you guys will be my co-pilots.
Oh, hey, oh, nice. Well, I mean, we've committed to a 3-hour stream now, Robin.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I hope you're going to have a great time in Indiana.
I don't know much about Indiana. I don't know anything about Indiana, really.
I know there's a place called Gary in Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I know.
It's isn't it the state where Parks and Rec is set? Have you seen Parks and Recreation?
I haven't, actually. So
it's a very, very wholesome TV show.
Learn something new.
Yeah. It's in the Michael Schur? Michael Schurverse. Guy who did the Office and the Good Place. And,
Oh yeah. It's in that kind of documentary style, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of improvised as well. Yeah. Right. Well, do you have any comments that you liked?
So also in last week's stream, my fact of the week last week was about Overton Bridge, which is a bridge in Scotland. And it's this mysterious bridge where dogs keep committing suicide. They keep accidentally or intentionally just suddenly jump, like dogs not on their leads, jump off this bridge, and many of them sadly, you know, die. A lot of them do survive. But this isn't like some urban legend or anything. This happens quite frequently, at least once a year, I think. But Quinn O'Shaughnessy makes a suggestion for us, Robin.
Mm.
About Alex's fact of the week, maybe you guys should bring a dog on a harness or lead and have its head wired in electrodes. Maybe then you guys could see if there's a notable change in the animal's brainwaves. Of course, the electrodes would have to be hooked up to a battery-charged machine that could record the brainwaves. But if it could be done, it might be an interesting experiment. Maybe bring along several dogs and compare the results, and perhaps a few cats to see if any other animals are also affected by whatever's going on at the bridge. I think that would be the most comprehensive way of solving that mystery, for sure. and I love the suggestion. I unless we get some sort of Netflix deal, I'm struggling to see the feasibility of it. I don't have any access to dogs or cats, and I don't think any shelter is going to donate them for this cause.
I don't know. We could persuade them that we're going to do it humanely.
We just want to wire up some dogs with electrodes and bring them very close to the edge of a bridge.
There may be a risk of drowning. We shall see what happens. massive shout out to Yorian Kivui. Apologies if I've butchered your name. I'm really sorry. He's just given us €2. And says, cool podcast, guys. Greetings from the Netherlands.
Oh, well.
Thank you so much.
Greetings to you, good sir. Thank you so much. That's very kind of you. Lovely. Well, I think that's a brilliant idea, though, Robin. What do you think about getting some dogs and cats together?
I think it's a great idea. And dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. We all know that this is a great thing to try to achieve. And if we can use Overton Bridge to bring them together in life or in death and get scientific data for research as well through technology, then yeah, we should absolutely try. And I think we could swing it. I think we just speak to the right people, grease the right palms. We all know what Scotland's like. A pound will go far, you know. No, I'm joking. Just battered Mars bars for everyone. You don't give money to the crew. You just pay them in fried food, don't you? That's the thing you do.
Robin, as a citizen of Scotland, I am taking outrageous offence to this right now. Spiffing says, pitch it to Channel 4. I've seen weirder things they've made. Do you know what? That's actually
that's true.
Idea.
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we pitch it before they get sold off and go become private, or do we pitch it now whilst they're still desperate?
Maybe we pitch it after, but we have some kind of sponsorship tie into like a dog food brand or something. You know, get the extra bucks rolling in.
What is it? Pedigree? Is that what it's called?
Pedigree sponsorship. Yeah. Sponsor it. Yeah. or get Red Bull to sponsor it if there's dogs jumping off bridges. Maybe, you know, have them in the logo. That's very Red Bull brand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
God, what am I saying?
Kurt, who's a channel member, says, evening, guys. Evening, Kurt. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for supporting us as a channel member. That's very much appreciated. Pedigree also, Chum brings you.
Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt that. Just said, Camera Shy Coco comments, says, I was born in a brand new unstocked ambulance halfway between Vincennes and Bicknell. I'm unsure of the direction of travel at the time. Have I missed something? That's an amazing fact. Thank you, Coco.
Is that a reference to something?
Out of context. What does that mean?
Unless it's you're just literally stating I was born in an unstocked ambulance.
Did we ask somebody? Where are Bicknell and Vincennes?
Mm.
Where are they? Oh, that's Indiana. Okay. Oh, Coco was born in Indiana. Cool.
Oh, nice.
Right. Callback. There we go. Everything's a circle. Everything ties together. That's the beauty of live streaming.
I'm trying to think of a segue from that to discussing aliens. And do you know what, Robin? I can't do it. Can't come up with that. I wonder if there's a lot of alien abductions that happen in Indiana. It's kind of Is it one of the states that have quite a few alien abductions?
Yeah, we could check this.
Check it. We need one. We need someone who, you know, like Joe Rogan has, who's like, oh, can we look this up? Can we look this up? We need someone to be in the background looking things up. looking things up live. Any conclusions? Any interesting results?
It doesn't seem like Indiana is at the top of the list for alien abduction cases.
Oh, but what is at the top of the list?
Arizona seems to be quite popular. Oh,
that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Nevada? Well, I imagine Nevada's got to be up there.
Not at the top, no. But then we're talking about alien abductions, but alien sightings might be different.
Yeah.
I don't know why I looked up abductions. Was that the question, or did I just decide to look that up?
No. Abductions.
It's more interesting.
Abductions was what I was asking.
Yeah.
A busy bee suggests Alexa. Yeah, actually, that would work. We could just get an Alexa thing. Yeah.
Well, we could. Yeah, so no, Indiana is not in the top 10. Neither is Nevada, but California is. California is the most likely.
Fair enough.
To see a UFO.
Camera Shy Coco actually says, I live, well, on Arizona now. Have you ever seen any kind of alien sighting, Camera Shy Coco? And that's a good question for everyone in the chat. Has anyone had any kind of weird sightings of aliens or extraterrestrial UFOs or any UFOs in general that they think they may, you know, they've seen something weird in the sky? And that's a question that extends to you, Robin, as well. Do you think you've ever seen a UFO of any kind?
No, you know, I have seen on two occasions something in the sky that I couldn't explain. And the first time it happened, genuinely, it was so odd. The object I saw in the sky that I genuinely could not think of what it could be. Whereas the second one was the classic triangle of lights.
You've seen a triangle of lights?
I saw a triangle of lights, but
it was
I don't know, but it was probably a plane, because at that point I'd seen enough planes at night that I thought that's probably the underside of a plane.
Yeah.
And I knew at the time I was nearish an airport. The UK is quite small, so if you're in the south of England, you're not far from an airport. So I rationalized that was a plane, but the first one, genuinely, I could not explain it. It was a dark object. It was light. It was evening, so the light was dark, but there were no lights on it. So it was something in the sky that wasn't a vehicle, or at least not a vehicle with lights on, which is illegal for most commercial flights, and it was moving at a really steady but quite slow speed through the sky. And it definitely wasn't a bird, because you know how birds are very small and they're a little bit erratic. Even when they fly smoothly, yeah, they glide for a short distance and they change direction, or they flap their wings to gain more height. And it wasn't a bird. And it was, yeah.
It wasn't a bird. It wasn't a plane.
It was something else. I don't know what it was, but it was definitely an object that was flying across the sky.
What did it like? What was the shape of it? What did it look like? I'm enraptured, Robin. I never knew this about you.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't describe the shape, but this is one of the reasons I remember it, because it was, I was looking at it in profile from a distance. I was out walking in some fields, as you do. Alone.
I feel like that's the start of like, we would cut to a recreation where you film this and it's in like this grayscale.
Yeah,
I was walking in some fields.
Heavy vignette. Yeah,
Matt Damon's playing you in the recreation of this. Yeah.
Oh well, I'm flattered. Yeah, and it was in the distance. It was not on the horizon, but it was near the horizon. And but it's hard for me to explain because there were no hills. I'm saying that so I could see the horizon. Quite low in the sky, but it wasn't far away on the horizon. It was actually quite close to me, if that makes sense. But it was, I was watching it in profile, and it was like a long kind of oblong shape. And it reminded me of the descriptions of the object in the Shag Harbor incident.
Ooh.
Back in, was that the 50s or was that the 60s? I can't remember now.
I thought it was the 50s, but I wouldn't want to say it in case I'm wrong.
If we both thought it was the 50s, then it might be the 50s. And that was my experience. I watched it, until it disappeared from view behind a line of trees. As in, it didn't go down behind the trees. There was a line of trees in the field. And
right. It flew behind.
Crossed them. That. Yeah. Yeah. And that was my experience. And I, to this day, cannot imagine what it was, because it had no obvious wings. It had no lights, like I said, and planes have lights on them. And it was not a bird.
That's
what about you? Have you ever had
really bizarre, Robin?
Kind of experience that?
No, nothing that I haven't been able to explain. Also, I would just say Shag Harbor was 1967, so we were both way off. Thank you for the people in the comments that have said that. Spiffing said 1967. Java Dog said 1962, but Java Dog, I believe you were mistaken there.
It's closer than we were.
That is closer than we were. So I remember one time I woke up and I had a window like close to my bed. Mm. And it was like one of the, my bedroom was in an attic. So it was one of those kind of corner windows, if that makes sense. Like a diagonal shaped window. So I could see the sky. So like I woke up and I could see the sky kind of thing. It was great. Loved it. And I remember waking up one time and I saw like three lights in the sky in the shape of a triangle, and it was huge. It looked huge. Like a huge, like a Independence Day kind of thing was roaming across the sky. And for like about 10, 15 seconds in my groggy state, I was so like scared and confused and thinking aliens were taking over. But then I kind of like blinked and woke up and I realized that they were planes, and they're all kind of moving in the same direction across the sky, all kind of, in an equidistant way apart. So the mystery was solved pretty quickly. But that's the only kind of, I haven't seen any other kind of UFOs. And that didn't count as UFOs at all, except for the 15 seconds
where
I was confused.
Yeah, for a moment it counted. Yeah, that's all it takes. That's all it takes.
So what have people said in the comments? Kurt has said, I remember seeing something going over my dad's old flat a few years back, had the shape of a stealth bomber, but looked bizarre. This was at night, so I can't fully recall it, but it was definitely strange. Ooh. Oh, that's interesting. I'd be interested in what way did it look more bizarre than a stealth bomber? Because I believe I said, maybe it was a couple of weeks ago, because that's quite a popular shape like UFO sighting people have, isn't it? That arrowhead, triangle arrowhead formation. Mm-hmm. And I think I said, maybe rather arrogantly and ignorantly, that people have just seen a stealth bomber, right? Like that's, if I saw a stealth bomber in the sky, I'd probably think that was an alien, or like some extraterrestrial UFO craft, because I've never seen that kind of thing before. But so I'd be interested to hear like how it was different, maybe how it varied.
Yeah, please do. Just want to interrupt you saying to say thank you to Bot Kinko or Kinko, sorry if I mispronounce your name, who just gave us $20. It says, have a good Friday.
That's so
have a good Friday,
you.
Boys.
Thank you so
amazing.
Much.
Amazing. Hope you have a great Friday too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very nice of you.
Incredibly generous.
We don't deserve that. We're just talking shit about UFOs. Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much. I was going to read out Kurt's comment as well. So thank you, Alex, for reading that out. Hey Now Paulie says, Hey Now Paulie says, I've seen two UFOs, never been probed though. I think they're shy. Maybe you just don't know they've probed you. Part of the whole thing is that they wipe your memory, right?
That's true. Maybe you're now an alien human hybrid.
Whoop whoop whoop.
Which can only be a good thing, really. Can only be a good thing. So Bush says people who believe they've been abducted by aliens really probably just experienced paralysis right before they woke up. Have you ever experienced sleep paralysis? Because people say people will say like, oh, It's normally with ghosts. People say, oh, I've seen a ghost.
Yeah.
And you say, oh, you saw a ghost. When was this? What happened? And then they will describe exactly to a T, like sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
Where And sleep paralysis is very creepy. I'm not trying to diminish anyone's stories.
It is. I wouldn't want to have it the way some people do on a regular basis.
And also, maybe it's not sleep paralysis. Maybe it is, you know, something paranormal going on. Sorry, Robin, what were you going to say something?
Bot Kinko just gave us $50 and says, I paint white walls with white paint for 10 hours a day. You guys keep me entertained every time we post a podcast. Thank you very much. Well, thank you very much.
That's insane.
That's absolutely
you
amazing.
Don't have to do that.
That's incredibly generous.
Oh my God. Wow.
Thank you.
Oh, well, look, here's to you, Bot Kinko. And
here's to you. There would be alcohol in this glass. It's just water at the moment, but I'm toasting you, raising a glass. And to everyone else who's given us their support, especially financial support, over the years, not just tonight, but all our patrons and YouTube members, thank you so much. Thank you.
That's very kind of you all. Yeah.
But yeah, just to segue clumsily back to what you're saying about sleep paralysis, I'd never experienced it until towards the end of last year. And I experienced it very, very briefly, not fully. So if you describe the symptoms of sleep paralysis, it often involves you losing control over your body. And I half woke up one morning last year and I couldn't move the left side of my body. And it was really freaky.
Yeah.
It was only for a few seconds though. And it was fine afterwards. And then I was kind of spent the next few nights afraid to go to sleep in case I woke up and was actually fully paralyzed in the classic sleep paralysis sense. But my wife gets it. It happens to her, so it's freaky when it happens.
A few people in the comments have talked about having it as well. Camera Shy Coco has an interesting take on it. They say, I have sleep paralysis regularly. I find it peaceful, but I know what it is. I mean, maybe well done, Camera Shy Coco, on clearly conquering what is an unbelievably scary experience for many people. I've never heard that take before, that you find it peaceful. I'm wondering anyone who's had it, because a recurring thing about sleep paralysis is people see like some black figure in the corner of the room, or like a dark shadowy figure that slowly approaches and you can't do anything about it. I wonder if anyone's had that kind of experience.
Not from sleep paralysis.
Hey.
Anyway. But so, would you like to move on to the main topic of today's podcast?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm getting so like invested in people's stories in the comments. We've made this way too interesting.
We can talk about that for a bit longer if you like. I'm happy to.
Let's just leave it on what Kurt said about the stealth bomber, or the potential UFO that he saw that looked like a stealth bomber, but kind of strange. He says, from what I remember, it was moving way too slow for any sort of plane. Plus, living in North Wales, it isn't really something we see up here. Oh, yeah. Okay. That bit of context does change things.
Yes.
If this was in like the Nevada desert or something, then sure. But North Wales, stealth bomber would be a bit out of... That would be a bit freaky. Like, you wouldn't expect to see something like that there.
So let's talk about what is ostensibly the main topic of this podcast, which at this point may take up, who knows, 15% of the runtime. We'll find out. And that is, a couple of scientists claim that they have found the real reason that we have not encountered aliens yet and have not been visited by aliens yet. It's not because they're visiting us in secret or they're observing us from a distance. It's for another reason entirely. And it's a bit of a surprise. Bit of a shock, bit of a disappointment, but it's related to finding an answer to the Fermi paradox. Now, for those of us who aren't quite au fait with the Fermi paradox, Alex explained it at the beginning of this podcast, but I'll go over it again now. And that's the Fermi paradox is named after an Italian physicist called Enrico Fermi, who died in 1957, I think, or 1954. And he came up with this theory in 1950. So just a few years before he died, actually.
Yeah, 1954.
He died in 1954, thank you, yeah. So he was only about 49, 50 when he came up with this paradox. And he's famous for creating the world's first nuclear reactor. And he won the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1938, I think. And he moved to America and became an American citizen. And it was when he was in America that apparently over lunch one day, he was talking to some of his fellow scientists and they were talking about alien life. And he said, you know, why haven't we been visited yet by aliens? How come we haven't found a trace of them yet? Yeah. And he realized that probability dictates that in all the vastness of the universe, with all the planets and with all the components for life being there present in the universe, there's just no chance that life does not exist on another planet, that Earth is the only planet in the universe that harbors life.
Exactly.
In which case, why have we not encountered alien life yet?
And he was ticked off because he was promised hot alien babes in his galactic quadrant. And where were they?
Yeah.
The ads lied, Robin. The ads on the questionable internet website had lied to him. There were no hot alien singles in his area.
Yeah, he was so clever. He was on the internet before anyone else was back in 1950. Yeah, so it's named after him. And it's a deliberate paradox. It's designed to be unanswerable, essentially. Obviously, scientists hope to find an answer for it, but up till this point, no one's really got an explanation for why statistically we should have alien life, but in practice, we haven't encountered it yet. But these two scientists now think they've got a solution to the problem. And that is, let's introduce who the scientists are. Actually, they're astrobiologists from the Carnegie Institute for Science in Washington and from the California Institute of Technology, Dr. Michael Wong and Dr. Stuart Bartlett, who believe that we have not encountered intelligent alien life yet, and intelligent alien life has not visited us yet, because all civilizations basically get too large and too technologically advanced, and they either destroy themselves or reach a condition of homeostasis, which means that they reach a kind of maximum point of development, things start to fall apart, and they look inwards and say, right, how can we fix all the problems that we have? And basically, they stop bothering with space exploration, which is a bit of a pessimistic view.
Can I just say, I've got some problems right off the bat with this.
Okay.
So first of all, that's not a new answer to the Fermi paradox. There have been several answers to the Fermi paradox. And one of the most notable is the great filter. Civilizations get too big and there's something that wipes us out. You know, our natural expansion inevitably leads to us nuking ourselves to death or something. That's not a new theory. And the other thing, like, I don't know. Why does it take all of humans' resources, like this kind of expansion mentality? Is that really what's... Are we really like pushing towards space at the moment? Is that the source of our problems, I mean?
No, I don't think... Maybe I misrepresented it. I don't think the theory is that space exploration is the source of the problem. It's that space exploration comes hand in hand with advanced technological development, but technology requires energy, and the benefits of technology mean population growth becomes huge and probably unsustainable. And I think the idea is that when you have achieved an advanced technology in civilization, you create the environment where populations can grow exponentially, and the energy resources required to keep that technology going are insufficient. Cannot be met by the natural resources that a society has to hand. So basically, demand for resources outstrips the supply. And the idea is that this is because technology goes too far. And we're kind of seeing that already, right? I mean, we're going to run out of fossil fuels very soon. We're already concerned with best case scenario, for setting aside climate change and pollution. We need to find other energy sources because we're going to run out of fossil fuels. So we're already kind of looking away from space exploration and back into just how can we find energy sources to keep the technology we already have going. And imagine the society, this is what the scientists are saying, imagine a civilization that is hundreds of years more advanced than ours. Imagine the energy that they need to keep their incredibly advanced technology going. And they say either one of two things happens. Either that society collapses because they can't find a solution to their problems and they run out of energy, everybody fights themselves, society kind of descends into a medieval state of being because everybody's like Mad Max, you know.
Sure.
Everyone's fighting for the precious fuel and the precious food, and it falls apart, and you can't have the level of large civilization organization that you need for space exploration to be successful. Or the society survives, but the only way for the society to survive is for them to reach, to achieve a state of kind of, I think the phrase they use is to abandon unyielding growth, they call, which is where you just keep growing and you grow beyond the ability to sustain yourself. And you basically stop society growing and say, we're only going to use the energy that we have, and we're only going to use the food that we have, and we're going to stop our civilization from advancing any further just so we can survive.
Maybe I've been browsing too much left-wing Twitter, Robin, but this almost seems like a veiled criticism of like late-stage capitalism almost. But there's maybe there's some kind of species lesson that we can take away from this. I guess my question, though, and I get this, but like even a civilization a couple of hundred years in the future from us, the energy that they'd be able to harvest would be directly from the sun, I would imagine. Like solar energy would be cheap and efficient. So surely that is more than enough energy to kind of, colonize a solar system, or colonize, even send probes to other star systems. So I don't know if you've seen, or anyone in the comments have seen, there's a Kurzgesagt video where they talk about making a Dyson sphere, which is it's like a device that can directly harness the energy of a sun. It's like a device that is built around a sun.
It would probably be made up of lots of small machines that would be in orbit around the sun and harvest the solar energy.
So a popular
then somehow
version.
Transmit it to a nearby planet. Goodness knows how.
A popular version of it is, like you say, a Dyson swarm, it's called. And they talk about the feasibility of it, and obviously it's heavily simplified to be a YouTube video, but it seems like it could definitely be possible in the next couple of hundred years to make something like that with automation and stuff, with automated machines on like Mercury, and it doesn't seem too far beyond the realms of possibility is all I'm saying. And I feel like if we can do that and find a way to transmit that energy, I don't know, that seems like we just have limitless energy.
I agree, but maybe what these scientists are suggesting is that before any civilization can reach that point where they're capable of building a Dyson sphere, they collapse. Think about it. Think about even Elon Musk would struggle to create a Dyson sphere at this point, you know? He can get a mission to Mars, but after that, does he have the resources to fulfill a vision of putting thousands, if not millions, of devices in orbit around the sun to harness the solar energy?
It's a good question. It's a good question. And yes, I guess before we see that, the way that things are going, maybe we'll kind of collapse before then, but I don't know. I don't know if I buy the idea that we'll have like endless expansion will be our undoing in terms of like, as an answer to the Fermi paradox anyway, because I could see us tackling the issue of always expanding and always needing to expand. That is a problem that we need to address as a society. And just to be okay to be like to plateau. Just to accept that, and that's fine. But I don't get why that translates to our innate human desire to explore. Why we would stop wanting to, reach out and make contact with other civilizations. I don't get why that would stop us from wanting to do that.
No, I agree with you. I think you said it already, but this new, in inverted commas, theory feels very much like a timely theory that's arisen out of the events of the last couple of years and the emphasis that's been put on, quite correctly, on tackling climate change and on our depleted energy resources and even the pandemic, where suddenly humanity is having a bit of an existential moment. and it obviously reflects our own history, where the space race, you know, back in the 1960s, it seemed like we were going to conquer space, right? There was no end to the level of progress, and then suddenly it just stopped, and it stopped for economic reasons, and that was it. And now it's kind of reigniting, but it's definitely not as fast as it was back in the 60s, you know, the rate of development, I would say. And there's a debate to be had about just how good it is to privatize space exploration, but that's beside the point. So I definitely think you're right that this is a very much a theory that's been influenced by the times we live in and by our recent history.
Yeah.
But there's some merit to it. I think it could explain why we haven't made contact, right? And I think the unspoken clause, the silent conclusion, implication of this theory must be basically what you've just said, which is humans would do it. There'll always be some people who want to go out there, and our society is so imbalanced that there'll always be some people who will have the resources to go into outer space. So why haven't alien civilizations done it?
Mm.
It may be, and this is depressing, it may be that this theory is correct and it applies to every other alien civilization that has developed in the rest of the universe up to this point. And we will be the first ones.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe we will be the first.
But also, I mean, I guess what they're saying is not that like people would do Well, I mean, I guess what they're saying might be implying is that most civilizations are like humans in that we will always need to ever expand, and we will always need to try and do that. And that in itself will be our undoing. And that's why we haven't made contact, because lots of other civilizations are like ours. And the ones that aren't like ours are the ones without that innate sense of exploration. And they're just content to be on their planet and just chill out and to mong to some snow patrol. And, and you know, yeah, I guess that kind of makes sense. Was there any research that went into this, or was this just a hypothesis that these scientists...
Well, this is it. This sounds very much like it's just a hypothesis. And it's not like they've done some deep hardcore maths to come up with the statistics or anything. It's just a suggestion, a thought experiment. And that doesn't mean it's a bad thought experiment. It just means it's philosophy to a certain extent, more than it is science. I think says this guy in his chair, literal armchair critic, like, hey, it's just philosophy, really. It's not science. Anyway,
all high and mighty up on our YouTube live stream. Yeah.
I think what one thing that I don't see mentioned very much is just the size of the universe, you know? And the universe is expanding, right? We know it's getting bigger. Maybe at some point it'll crunch and it'll reach its limits, but at the moment it just seems to be getting bigger. And the distances between planets, let alone solar systems, let alone parts of a galaxy, let alone galaxies, let alone galaxies on other sides of the universe, are literally, they're astronomical. They are huge distances that we just can't begin to comprehend. And the level of technological advancement you would need to cover those distances in any amount of time that is efficient, certainly within the lifespan of organisms, is so huge. Part of me thinks that maybe it's just too soon. Because if you look at the development of life on this planet, we have finally started exploring space at this point in our history. And the Earth is what? 5-6 billion years old? Sun...
Is this your kind of theory on the Fermi paradox, that it's an established theory, but we are the first. We're the first to get to this point.
I'm saying we might not be the first. I'm saying I think the implication of this new theory by these scientists is that we may be the first to get to this point, or rather we may be the first to explore space in a meaningful way and make contact with other species. What I'm saying is that I think it's reasonable to assume that we are not the first species to reach a level of technological advancement where we're exploring space, but that even if they've done it millions or hundreds of millions of years ahead of us, if they happen to be on a planet on the far side of a galaxy, on the far side of the universe, the amount of time it's going to take them to get over here to meet us,
it's just not worth
it. They might just be on their way. They're on their way. You know, it's going to take them a long time. So it might just be we're being too impatient, you know, because we've started looking at the stars and thinking alien life is a probability just in the last 200 years. And so we're like, oh, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? And the other aliens are like, we're on our way. Just slow down.
And they're going to get here expecting to see dinosaurs and T-Rexes and stuff. And they'll be like, who the hell are you, apes? What are you doing? Yeah. And then we'll be like, look, hang on. Jurassic World 2 Dominion's out. Let's watch that together.
Yeah.
And that's how peace is made in the universe.
exactly. Jurassic World Dominion. I mean, you have a point, though, about peace, right? It may be that, and this is where this theory has a point, it may be that for a society, a civilization, to make organized outreach into space, right, you have to unify a planet.
Do you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think just realistically, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence is a global organization.
Yeah,
but
sure,
actually,
yeah.
But it's not actually a well-funded organization. It's a collection of individual scientists who happen to be working, and they share their information.
Yeah,
you know, they're not actually a big. They're not like the United Nations with a massive budget or a bureaucracy or anything in place. They're just individual scientists getting whatever money they can to fund their projects, and then they're sharing their research with other scientists around the world. They're individuals. Mm. So that's our attempt to make contact with alien life. So if you're going to really succeed in making contact with alien life, you need to send messages out, you need to send ships out in every single direction. And, you know, all 360 degrees around the Earth, all however many millions of light years in every direction, right? So to do that efficiently and effectively, essentially, you need the whole planet to be behind the effort. You need everybody to say, yeah, we're going to do this. But going back to what you said about priorities, maybe by the time any civilization on any planet has reached a point where the entire globe is unified in peace and prosperity and a desire to work together and be happy, their priorities simply are that. And the job of maintaining peace and prosperity is enough that going out into space is just low on their list of priorities.
It's just a hassle, just a nuisance.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, it's an interesting idea. I'm not sure if that's my favorite answer to the Fermi paradox. I'd be interested to know anyone who, in the comments, if they have a favorite answer to the Fermi paradox. Or if you, Robin, if you have one that you're like kind of hoping for or hoping it's not the case. The really scary one to me, or the scariest one to me, is the dark forest angle of the Fermi paradox, which is basically the aliens are out there. And the really advanced ones that have managed to survive and become like type one, type two civilizations, they know to shut the hell up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they don't make any noise. And they're probably listening to us being like, shut up right now. And if you make too much noise, there's some kind of, you know, there's scary alien pirates out there that are going to come and blow your planet up basically with a Death Star or do something, you know.
Right.
So really it's like, it's a dark forest, basically. You imagine yourself in a dark forest. You don't know what's out there amongst the trees. You be quiet. You don't make a noise. You try and stay hidden.
Yeah. I hadn't thought of it in that sinister a way, but I think that's my favorite explanation so far. It's that they are out there and they know we exist. They're so advanced. They know how to keep quiet and keep hidden.
Yeah. And the universe is like a quiet place, basically.
Yeah. And there's that other theory that they're alien observers, that, you know, they're watching us and studying us and learning about us. I don't know if I could be so egotistical as to assume that any aliens really would bother to study us.
No, but an alien zoo thing, I quite like the zoo hypothesis. Yeah, people just come and visit us and gawk at us.
Yeah, I think
look at these apes.
I like that idea. Yeah. That every once in a while, some family on their holiday, their intergalactic holiday, swings by. You know, we're at junction 5732 on the intergalactic highway, and they stop off and say, "Oh, don't stop at the Earth services."
Some really dodgy roadside space zoo. They've got a yeah. Who is the Tiger King guy? They've got a space Tiger King alien, and we're in his kind of messed up alien zoo.
Basically,
yeah. I just sent a pandemic down there now. Yeah, watch them struggle.
And the alien Carol Baskin is just ruining everything for him. Yeah, I like that idea. I think that's more likely than anything else at this point.
So that's the conclusion. We're in an alien zoo run by what's his name? Joe something. Joe.
Exotic.
Joe Exotic. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
We're in a Joe Exotic type alien zoo. I think that's... What do you guys think in the comments? I think that's the most believable answer to the family paradox. The alien zoo hypothesis is probably my favorite one. It's the most optimistic one. That, like, once you reach a certain point, though, the Star Trek, you know, what's it called? The
Prime Directive.
The Prime Directive, exactly.
Yeah, the non-interference.
Yeah, rule. We have to get to a certain point, and then eventually they'll be like, hey, come on, welcome to the galactic community.
I like and it that. May happen. Yeah, according to Star Trek, it happened in like 2050, I think. So there's still time. It could happen within our lifetimes. We achieve faster than light travel, and then the Vulcans come down and say, live long and prosper. Well done. Welcome to the club. Let's found a federation. And then we have, you know, centuries of peace and war with Klingons and Romulans and all kinds of alien species who all weirdly are humanoid.
But that's, I mean, that's, there's that theory, isn't there, that when we discover aliens, it'll be kind of weird because they will just be humans. There's a theory that, like,
right. Yeah.
I mean, as people have said in the comments, a lot of our discussion might have sounded a bit egotistical, but, and this is probably going to sound egotistical as well.
Mm.
But there's that theory, isn't there, that we are actually the pinnacle of evolution. And that if you find species evolved on other planets similar to Earth, then the evolution will just happen the same way again, or a similar way. There'll be some kind of primates. They may be like Homo erectus or something, you know. Yeah. But
This is what James Cameron was thinking when he made Avatar, and all the life on Pandora is very similar to Earth life. It's just slightly different. And there's a scientific logic to that, because, you know, the search for life on other planets at the moment is driven by the search for water, because it's the one thing that we do know for sure supports life.
Yeah.
Until we find life of a completely different kind that doesn't require water, we won't know. all we can go on is that water is necessary for life. So there's a scientific rationale for thinking that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Doom in the comments says, us, the pinnacle. Alex, please, have you seen us? And I mean, yeah, I'm not saying that's a good thing, but like, if we are the pinnacle, then that is a scary place to be in the state of the universe. But
I think that's the most depressing thing about it, I think. And this new theory kind of harkens back to that idea, is that all civilizations are doomed to self-destruction, and that's because the only thing we've got to go on is human history, and all human civilizations seem to self-destruct at some point. And, you know, it's worrying to think where we'll be in just a few hundred years' time, if we'll be here at all.
I mean, we definitely won't be. I won't be, but you will be, Robin. You'll probably have upgraded to a new hard drive.
No. I'll be cryonically frozen and reawoken by Chris Pratt on a spaceship into deep space because he's lonely.
Wow, spoilers, Robin.
Spoilers for this film, which does not star me and Chris Pratt.
So, well, thank you, everyone, so much for listening to us ramble about aliens. I'd definitely be really interested to hear what everyone else's opinions are on the Fermi paradox. Is there anything that we need to tell the kind folks at home?
I don't think so. Just thank you again. Big thank you for first listening to us, especially for joining us on the live stream. Also, this video will be cut down for YouTube and it will be available separately, but the full podcast will still be available just by clicking on the link, which will be in the description below. And don't forget to check us out on Twitch, twitch.tv/just_interesting, where especially Alex does the occasional gaming live stream.
Yeah, and I hopefully we'll be doing more of that. I haven't been in a while. So I should, I know I need to get back into that and I definitely will. In the next
That's all right, I need to get into it too. And we also have Twitter. Please do follow us on Twitter at jinterestingyt, or I'm at alltimerobin.
And I'm at justalexing.
Yeah, please do share all your thoughts on Twitter or in the comments below. If you're obviously listening to us on a podcast platform of your choice, then reach out to us on Twitter. Please do. And let us know any other topics you'd like us to discuss in future episodes. In case you're wondering...
Oh, sorry. You go ahead.
I was going to say, in case you're wondering... Martin is free. He's out. He's just, you know, the electronic bracelet has been playing up.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll be returned to a three-person setup next week. Oh, no, we won't, actually, will we? No, we won't.
We won't, no.
And I will say right now, Martin's getting out of jail and I'm going into jail next week. So you'll all hear about it on the news. It's not true. None of it's true. I've got great lawyers. They'll get me off, so it's fine. But no,
Amber Heard. It's all lies.
I'm looking forward to the reason that you guys come up with. But at least next week it should be Martin and Robin back. But yeah, no, thanks everyone so much for watching. We hope you enjoyed this discussion, and we will see you next time.
Bye for now.
Bye bye.